NPR.
Hey everyone, it's Cardiff. This is the Indicator from Planet Money. After World War II ended in 1945, the three decades that came next were a kind of golden era for the U.S. economy, when the economy itself grew super fast, yes, but more importantly, the benefits of that economic growth were shared widely. Wages and salaries went up for pretty much everyone, and there was a big and growing and prosperous middle class. And so there's a lot of common theories for why those decades were so great for the middle class. For example, the unions were stronger back then, or the tax code reduced inequality, or the troops were back from the war and benefited from the GI Bill, which gave them money for college. But there's a missing element, a missing story in all these theories, a missing story that's now been told with a lot of new research in a book called The Riches of This Land by Jim Tankersley of the New York Times. And understanding this missing story might also be necessary for understanding why that golden era for the middle class ended around the late 1970s and early 80s, and crucially, for understanding how we can get it back someday. So what is this missing story? Jim Tankersley joins us, and he's going to tell us right after a quick break.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Microsoft. The world has changed, and Microsoft Teams is there to help us stay connected. Teams is the safe and secure way to chat, meet, call, and collaborate. To learn more, visit Microsoft.com/Teams. Support for this podcast and the following message come from Google. Google has a variety of free tools and resources to help small businesses adapt, from trainings to on-demand classes through Grow with Google. Explore Google's free tools for small businesses at google.com/small business.
Jim Tankersley, welcome to the podcast.
I am so thrilled to be here. Thanks for having me.
So Jim, in your book, The Riches of This Land, you put forward a kind of alternative thesis, or at least a complementary thesis, for why the middle class did so well in the post-war years. Tell us what it is.
Well, it's the missing piece to everything else that you know, that you've heard in your history class, and it's the thing that we don't hear much about, which is this idea that before World War II, most of the American economy at the very top end was restricted to white guys. Basically, white men held, they were the doctors, they were the lawyers, they were the scientists and the engineers. And after the war, both by the necessity of the war effort and then by the hard work and protest of civil rights, women and men of color and immigrants started to gain entry slowly, but they gained entry to those occupations. And when they burst down the walls of inequality and were able to get into these high-skilled areas, they were able to put their talents to much better use. It turns out if you have a population that is normally distributed with talent, you're not going to have 94% of the doctors actually be white guys in an efficient distribution. And so when you start to reshuffle that distribution and let the talented people do the highest skilled work, they create more growth. That growth creates jobs. And in the case of the post-war era, it came with low unemployment, which that's the magic formula. Strong growth, low unemployment, or raising incomes for everyone. And what ends up happening is you add millions of people to the middle class.
Yeah, and in this idea of reducing barriers for women, women of all races, and for men of color, there's an economics lesson here, too, about matching people to the best place for them to work, the place that matches their talents. And it turns out that it's not just good for them because then they make more money and they're doing their best work. It actually turns out to be good for everybody.
Yeah, that's the great thing about it. And just to be clear about what we're talking about here, the first thing they had to do was get access to the workplace at all. From 1950 to 1980, 27 million women entered the workforce who had otherwise been working from the home or just not working at all. But then the second thing is you have to get actual access to jobs you weren't allowed to do. And again, it turns out when you make your entire operation better, that lifts everyone. It wasn't just incomes rising for black men or for women of all races. It was incomes rising for white guys, including like white guys who didn't go to college. And so this was this golden era, as I call it in the book, of middle class flourishing for everyone. And it really speaks to this idea that when all workers do well, all workers do well together.
Yeah, and so this period of prosperity lasts from roughly the end of the Second World War and then into the 1970s. But since then, something's happened, and the middle class has not gained in prosperity to the same extent that the overall U.S. economy has grown. It seems like a lot of the gains of economic growth since then have gone to people in elite jobs and the upper classes. What do you think happened?
I think two big things happened. First off, we left the work of civil rights unfinished. In particular, the elite white men who ran the country just decided to stop the work early. In the Reagan administration, they started to roll back several parts of civil rights. And there was this idea that, in fact, they were going to challenge affirmative action in court, for example. They pursued a war on drugs that mass incarcerated black men. Those things served to dampen the allocation of talent in the United States. And then the other thing that happened was the economy changed, and we didn't change policy to keep up with it, and that didn't allow our best workers to flourish. And so the best example I can give to you on that is that discrimination still persists dramatically in the economy, and we can see it because the way that the economy has shifted toward a more service-based economy and that favors people with college degrees over the last several decades should be a thing that rewards women because they are absolutely the most educated part of the U.S. workforce. But instead, in the 2000s, we saw female labor force participation plateau and move backwards. And the reason for that, it appears in the research, is because we didn't keep up with childcare policies. We didn't make it easy for women to have and raise children, which our society still puts the burden on them to do, for a large part. We didn't make it easy for them to do that and also contribute to the workforce and be paid in the same way as men. And so that policy failure, the shift in the economy, the allowing of discrimination to linger and in some cases return, all of that adds up to an economy where the middle class just hasn't done as well over that time period.
Yeah, and there's also a message of hope in your book. You end on a message of hope, which is that if we have gone through an era before when we were lowering barriers to participate fully in the economy, and if we've gone backwards, it means that there is room to make progress there again. We did it once before. Why can't we do it again?
We can do it again. I mean, that is what's, I am hopeful. I'm a cynical reporter, but I'm hopeful about the middle class. And it's, you know, despite all evidence of the entire time that I've been covering the economy.
Me too, man. I get it.
I know. And certainly despite the evidence of what's happening around us right now, right? We're in the depths of a pandemic recession. It's really, really bad. But we have the raw materials right around us to create another boom. You know, it's true that we're not going to have another post-war situation where the rest of the world is depressed economically and we're going to make all this stuff to sell to them. But we have this comparative advantage that, you know, really sets us apart, which is our ability to harness the power of our workforce. So if we could do again what we did in the civil rights era and really finish the work of eradicating discrimination, which I know is really hard. It's, one neat trick. We're just going to end systemic racism and sexism. But if we could do that, we really would create another massive boom of the middle class that would pull all Americans, including white men without college degrees, up and into a better, more secure life for themselves and their children.
All right, Jim, to close out this interview, I'm going to put you on the spot just a little bit. You get one policy, okay, that you know is going to be enacted and that would most sort of help realize the vision that you put forth in this book. What would your policy be?
I really think you have to invest in a policy that creates a working, like, super supportive childcare system across the United States for everyone. That is both a supply side policy that increases the amount of available childcare and reduces its cost, but also a demand side that helps people afford it. If you could put a sort of universal childcare system in through both of those levers, then you'd absolutely free up far more women to work in the United States, you know, work more and contribute more and get paid more throughout the course of their careers.
This episode of The Indicator was produced by James Sneed. Indicator is fact-checked by Brittany Cronin and edited by Patty Hirsch. And The Indicator is a production of NPR.
Black voters play a crucial role for any Democrat who seeks to win the White House. But some big divides amongst that bloc and some serious ambivalence could determine who is elected president this November. Listen now on the Code Switch podcast from NPR.